Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Winning cures everything. Now for your hosts, Gary and Chris.
Welcome in, Winning Cures Everything. It is the Monday, July 12th edition of the podcast. That's right, podcast only. I'm Gary.
And I'm Chris.
And what a fun weekend. You know, this has been all right. Like, weekend after, hey, check this out. I went to Walmart yesterday. I was just going to grab some burgers. I was going to, you know, actually fire up the grill a little bit. Completely sold out of ground beef. You ever had that happen?
Well, no, but that's because you went to Walmart.
I went to
Kroger and I got ground beef.
I went to Walmart because it's, yeah, you know where I live. It's right down the street. And typically, it's.
But it's not like the city's out of ground beef. No, that just one store was out of ground beef because yes. Target also had it as well.
Oh, I figured as much. I just didn't feel like going that far. I decided late in the afternoon and I was getting ready for UFC 264 and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go grab some burgers and all this kind of stuff. Man, completely sold out. I think they had two things. One was like a super expensive Angus, whatever, like steak burger kind of thing. That wasn't pre-made patty. It was just a big hunk of meat. And the other was like super lean ground beef. And both of them looked bad. And it was just two left out of the entire thing. They did not have steaks. They had nothing. I was like, this is absurd.
That's strange. I'm sure they just probably got a truck that didn't come in.
That's my guess.
It has to be a supply issue. Because while the price of meat has gone through the roof, not that anybody on this show baby cares, I don't think we have a shortage. I just think shit's getting more expensive because of whatever.
Yeah, that's what I think. That's what I think. So how did your weekend go? Everything go well?
I mean, it's been fine. Nothing big happened, nothing bad happened, but nothing great happened either. Just hung out the house and
not bad.
You know.
Not bad.
Very, I know, very low key.
You watched the Euro finals, right?
I watched the Euro finals. I did.
I had it on in the background. I've been doing all of our like college football preview stuff for SBR. So I didn't sit and watch it, but I could see where people would get super into this. There were intense moments, and it felt like, I mean, because it's a final, every different kick of the ball felt like it was super important. Did it come off like that to you, or was it just?
Well, yeah. And I mean, the fact that England's hosting, England hadn't won this thing in, you know, decades. And also the fact that they scored 2 minutes and 6 seconds into the thing. And it looked like, that was going to be a big deal, but kind of after that score, they didn't have a whole lot of good shot attempts the rest of the game. Italy took forever to score, but they kind of dominated the match. I mean, they had a lot of shots on goal. They had a lot of good looks that barely missed. I mean, it was intense, obviously. It wasn't ugly. All the goals scored mattered. It went into penalty kicks, and the goalie for Italy just got the biggest balls in the world, made three stops. you just never see a team go two out of five in penalty kicks. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And the fact that he stopped three of them were pretty amazing. One was missed. The guy got too cute. The other two were just dead ass stops.
Yeah. It's crazy. And also Italy wins the Euros and we move on from the soccer world for a little while again, right?
That's right.
So
that's
not too much going on with that. Let's go ahead and discuss, I guess, the biggest news story of the weekend. I mean, aside from soccer, I suppose. McGregor breaking his leg, UFC 264. I bought the fight last night, and I think I got my money's worth. I feel okay about it because, I don't always buy it just for the headliner. There were a lot of good fights last night. Greg Hardy is a joke, but Ty Tuivasa was fantastic drinking Chewies afterwards. I don't know if you've seen this guy. He pours beer into a shoe and drinks it.
No, so I saw that. Listen, at the College World Series, I saw a Texas guy do this. I've seen it at Major League Baseball games a couple of times. I don't know when this became a thing.
It's pretty gross.
And I don't know, is this a thing where I'm almost 40 and so this all just looks like dumb shit to me? Or if I was 20, would I be doing this?
I don't think at 20 I would ever be drinking a beer out of somebody's shoe. So he did it.
Or my own shoe.
Or my own shoe, right? I wouldn't do that.
Much less nobody else's foot fungus. And he drank them out of multiple people's things.
Yes.
No, this was on the internet. This made the way. Oh, yeah. I watched a lot of these fights afterwards, by the way. It's a beauty of the internet.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll tell you the best fight and the scariest guy in the world to me was a guy that got beat, and he got beat bad.
Oh, you talking about the guy that fought O'Malley?
Yeah, Chris Matoi?
I think so. That was only his second UFC fight ever. And he came in on 11 days notice.
11 days notice. This guy, O'Malley, hit him about the head 180-something times.
It was so significant strikes.
And he never stopped coming forward.
Fight metric, I believe it was like 250 significant strikes landed. I mean, it was a freaking record.
He never stopped coming forward. They finally called the fight with 30 something seconds left, and I was pissed. And O'Malley, who was very admonishing of his opponent, was like, "Well, he better be glad they called it, because in that last 30 seconds, I would have knocked." No, you weren't. No, you weren't. There's not a man alive that was knocking that guy out. Okay.
Here's the numbers, by the way. 230 out of 318 significant strikes. That's a 72% clip. And no, he was wailing.
I'm telling you, about 180 of those were direct face shots.
Yes, yes.
That's,
it was insane.
That's what I'm saying. And O'Malley hit him with all he had, and every punch O'Malley threw, O'Malley was going backwards, and Chris never stopped going forward.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, I've never seen, this looks like something out of the Terminator. Like, this is a guy that just keeps getting beat on, but he's the one going forward, and he never stopped talking shit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, he was still pointing at him.
I love that guy. I immediately went to the internet and tried to look him up. He's not on Twitter. Like, oh shit. Like, I need this guy in my life.
Oh, yeah. My wife said the exact same. My wife is not a UFC fan. You know this, but she watched that fight because I wanted her to watch Sugar Sean. And she said, "Who is this dude?" I said, "He's just a scrub. Like, they just signed him.
He's just a bum. And this dude is the toughest guy." So here's the thing. I want to ask you this question. Okay. If we need to nix some of our other topics because we're actually going to spend more time on this, do that. I don't care. But let me tell you something. How do you know you have, that's not anything you can train, right? What are the chances that somebody is able to take that much punishment to the face and head and still just continue to function as if nothing in his life has happened? What are the chances that guy doesn't become an accountant and we don't know that he has this magic trick built in? Like, he just happens to become a fighter, a dude that's impossible to knock out.
I think that's the way it goes. Like, you only figure it out by getting punched in the face, right? So do you remember the Gaethje Tony Ferguson fight from back in like October or whatever it was, or whenever the thing, I guess it was last summer. But that one, like, Gaethje punched him and punched it, and I'm talking haymakers. Like, yes, he put everything in,
knock him out.
Yes. That's right. I mean, it just took for, and I think they finally got a stoppage like late in the fifth round. Kind of like this one. Like, there's 30
seconds
left. Just like
this one, man. And I'm going to tell you this, they shouldn't have stopped it. This guy was, he had completely all, when the fight was over with, the guy that had been beat about the face looked more in his zen, more had his faculties better than O'Malley. O'Malley was laying on the ground in exhaustion. And the guy that had been beaten to death, his face looked like hamburger meat, but he 100% looked more ready to fight.
Well, so that guy, Chris Motino.
Motino, that's
He only hit 70 out of 218 total strikes.
And very few of those were clean also.
So he hit 32%. O'Malley hit 230 out of 318. Like I said, 72%. I could see where O'Malley would be tired. After throwing 318 strikes in a three-round fight,
The man didn't get you getting hit by 300 strikes should also 200 strikes should also make you tired and exhausted.
Oh, absolutely.
And not want to fight anymore.
So what ended up happening here? Head strikes, O'Malley hit 177 out of 255.
I knew it was close to 180. I just couldn't believe it. I was just like, this is insane.
And only two of those hits by O'Malley were in the clinch. 228 of them were at distance, which is ruthless.
When O'Malley had like 11 inch reach on him.
Yeah.
I mean, it was not insignificant. It was pretty massive. His kicks, God, he could have kicked him, you know, and he did kick him without him being able to get within a foot and a half, 2 feet of him.
I mean, it was a bananas fight. And that's one of the reasons why I bought it, right? Sean O'Malley is not even like, I don't even think he's in the top 15 of the UFC bantamweight rankings, but he's now what, 14-1, I think. You know, he lost one fight due to an injury, and that's the only fight that he's knocked out basically everybody. I mean, he puts on a show every time. He and McGregor are the two that I wanted to watch. Like, that's 100% what it was. So I was tuned in immediately, and then I watched the entire main card. After that, like, Irene Aldana, that was women's bantamweight. Like, she didn't get weight, but she still beat the crap out of this other girl, and I don't know. There's a whole thing going on with that. But that one wasn't super exciting to me. Tuivasa knocking out Hardy was one thing. Gilbert Burns, it surprised me that Gilbert Burns was an underdog to Stephen Thompson. I actually made money on this one. I should have given this out as a pick the other day. But Burns as an underdog to Wonder Boy was ridiculous. That was free money. He was like plus 140 in this fight. Like, it was absolutely absurd, but it was a boring-ass fight.
I thought all the rest of the fights were boring. I really did. Like, I watched them on the internet. I went to YouTube. I went whatever afterwards, and I didn't find a single other fight entertaining until the McGregor-Poirier fight.
And so Burns and Stephen Thompson, like, it was super boring, and Dana even comes out and talks about it because Burns is, like, he's the number two contender, like, but he just got beat by Kamaru Usman. Like, he had his title shot, but he was like the next best guy in that division. Wonderboy is like 38 years old. Like, he's my age, man. Like, you know, he's been around forever, and he hung in there, but man, that was like, think about this. The O'Malley fight, O'Malley hit 230 significant strikes. Burns won a three round fight, unanimous decision, and only had 29 strikes. I mean, that's how crazy it is. He had three takedowns in this, and it's that constant, like, I hate fighters that do this. And everybody in the arena was booing at this, but he leaned on him on the cage, like, for the majority of the fight, and it's so boring. Like, I cannot stand that stuff. So, all right, so the biggest thing of the night was McGregor and Poirier, and, man, this was a vile, ruthless, like, you could tell that there was animosity in this fight, like, for whatever reason. And I could not believe the arena, like, almost the entire arena was booing Dustin Poirier.
Well, yeah, they're all little Conor puppets, man. So you know me, I've watched Conor McGregor for a long time. I've been a fan of Conor McGregor's for a long time. I made it clear before the fight on our Friday show. We recorded Thursday. I made it abundantly clear. I'm done with this guy. I was done with him after the last fight. I think he's a fraud. I think he has made a lot of money, and now he does this for a job. He's a sideshow. He cares about the money. He doesn't actually want to be a fighter anymore. He would rather dance. He would rather care about the flash. He talks a lot of shit, but he doesn't actually fight. And in a sport where 90% of the action and fighting, because it's one individual versus one individual, so much of it is surrounded upon gambling. If you're not going to go into that arena, whatever it is, and give your all, and you're just going to fuck around, then I got nothing for you. I don't care if you're likable, if you're an asshole, whatever. You have to go out there and actually try. I've seen Connor too many times go out there and just fuck around. And some of these guys, because he's such a good fighter, he's such a good striker, that it didn't matter and he could still beat them. But that those days are done when he fights guys that are equal to him or better than him. And I'm done. I'm done. People bet on him. People follow him. People worship his brand. And you know what? I think he's incredibly fake. I don't see him as this tough, you know, come from nothing Irishman who's made it to the top and something to be honored and remembered in a positive light anymore. Yep. I see him as somebody who got rich, likes being rich, likes being a superstar, and that's it. He's no longer a great fighter, but I don't care about your brand. I don't care about all the bullshit. I want to watch you fight. Well, now I'm done watching you fight. You've lost four out of the last five fights. Some of them you've gotten beat pretty good. This one right here, you know, 80% of fighters that fight in the UFC, if they get somebody in the guillotine the way he got Poirier in the guillotine, like, it's over. Those guys don't get out. Okay. Well, Connor is so shitty on the ground that it was no question that Poirier was going to get out.
Yeah.
Poirier
he was going to get out because it,
and then once they're on the ground, Poirier's just, that's where Poirier's going to dominate him and destroy him.
Oh, it was a bad, the strategy I think was bad from the beginning. I think he thought he was going to surprise him with some of that. But where he took him down for the guillotine was terrible. Like, it was just a bad strategy from the get-go.
That's because he's not smart. He's not a good... All he can do is throw punches and kicks. Yeah. And those things, he is a great striker. Yes. Great striker. Yes. Outside of that, but that's not what the UFC is. That's just not it. You want to go join a kickboxing club? Go join a kickboxing club. But if they can grab you, then if anybody can grab you worth a damn at your age now, they're gonna have their way with you unless they're just significantly worse than you.
So here is my rebuttal to this, right? So we can talk about McGregor. We're tired of him losing, et cetera, et cetera. But if you look at his... So November 2016, I was over at your house, and we watched him win his second...
The double belt.
Yeah, the double belt, right? And he beat Eddie Alvarez, and he was amazing. But then he goes the next summer and fights Floyd Mayweather, and then he comes back October 2018. He doesn't fight for 2 years in MMA. They take away his double belts, and he goes back and he fights Habib, right? And you lose to Habib, okay, because nobody has ever beaten Habib, right?
Okay.
So then he comes back out and he beats Cowboy Cerrone in like 40 seconds, but Cerrone was a shell of himself at that point. He's lost like six straight. That's right.
He fought Cowboy at a time where Cowboy just couldn't fight in that fight.
So that was January of 2020. And then January of this year, he fights Dustin Poirier, who I believe is the guy that's going to hold the belt when this is all said and done. Like, Charles Oliveira is the guy. I think Dustin Poirier is the best lightweight in the world.
I did too.
McGregor didn't come up in lightweight. The only lightweight fight he ever had before this was beating Eddie Alvarez, who was a champion, was good, but he was a featherweight. Like, McGregor was always he was a 145 guy, and now he's moved up to 155, and he thinks that he can go toe-to-toe with these dudes that have been fighting 10 pounds heavier than him forever. I think it's terrible matchups and a terrible decision by him. Like, don't get me wrong, he's making oodles of money, But I think hang on, Gary, you got to be able
all
to go
of these
beat
things
somebody.
That you're saying that are I don't know justifications, excuses, whatever. Those are they're all by his choice.
Yes,
he chose to take the $100 million payday of Floyd Mayweather instead of dominating his sport. He chose money over greatness, and therefore that was his decision, not my decision. So I have no qualms about taking away his greatness in my eyes.
Yeah, no, I'm okay with that. I don't get me wrong. I don't think he's great. I think he's a fantastic showman. And I do enjoy
watching
him fight.
But I'm done with
fight.
The show. If you're not going to be great, you can't be a good showman. You can't be a showman and get your ass kicked all the time. No one wants to hear a loser talk shit, Gary.
No, I agree with that.
Like a loser. When he lost the last fight and immediately came out and made all these excuses about, oh, well, I didn't do this and I didn't do that and I wasn't really trying. And I said, no. Nobody wants to hear. You know what losers do? Losers make excuses.
Yes.
And that's what Conor's become. He's become a whiny baby who makes excuses.
Well, Poirier for sure, to think that Poirier was ever going to just roll over in that first fight is ridiculous, because Poirier doesn't roll over.
One of the best fighters in the world.
You remember when this fight first was announced? It was a McGregor Poirier exhibition fight that was going to go on in Ireland, and it was just a simple, it wasn't UFC sanctioned, it wasn't sanctioned by anybody, it was just them doing like four rounds or whatever it was, and they were going to do their own pay-per-view, and all of the money, or a big portion, I think it was like 75% of the money, was going to go to the Good Fight Foundation. And it was like this whole thing, and Dana White said, whoa, I got two of my top draws doing an event outside of UFC? Like, you guys have lost your mind. If you're going to fight, you're going to do it here, and then you can do whatever you want to with your purse. I don't care. But if you're doing anything, it's going to be in UFC.
Yeah, if you're under my contract, you have to work under my facilities.
And I totally get that. But as
I would too. I wouldn't allow him to go outside of there.
As soon as it became an actual UFC fight, remember, Dustin has never won a belt. That's his goal. He has stated it for years. He is not going to take a loss to McGregor that's going to move him back down the lane. The only title fight that he has gotten, remember, outside of Bones Jones and George St. Pierre, he is now the third quickest guy to get to 20 UFC wins out of everybody. 20 UFC wins. He was not going to roll over. Like, to think, for Conor McGregor to think that he was doing Poirier a favor, like, this dude is lethal. Like,
but
I mean, it's
because,
ridiculous.
But hang on. Once, all of these are negatives for Conor.
Yes, I know. What I'm saying
is, but why do people still love it? Why do you still say that he's a great showman when he's just an ass? At some point in time, it stops being a show and you're just a dick.
Yeah, no, I do agree with that.
Because we've crossed that level now.
Oh, yeah.
And it's been crossed for a while. But if you could win, then you could back up some of this shit talking, and that's different. But now there's no backing it. He's just a dick. And he's resorting to childhood bully type things, which is, if I can't beat you, I'll just make fun of you. And I've got a mob of fans, 20-year-old drunken Irishmen, that'll do anything that I want them to do. And I'll just sick my mob on you.
Yeah.
And that's what bullies do. That's what losers do. And that's what he's become. He's become a fucking loser.
Not to say that the Barstool guys are losers, but it's kind of like that internet mentality that Barstool uses. Like, if somebody talks shit about Barstool, they immediately sick everybody on whoever it is, right?
Yeah, but the difference is, now you're trying to compare a media company to a fighter.
Well, but it's basically El Presidente, Portnoy. It's basically, but like, when Portnoy does something like that, he like calls out all of his million whatever followers, and they attack.
But it's usually when he's been falsely accused of something or like in the wrong. I don't know that I've ever seen him do this when like he's been legitimately criticized. Like,
he
owns his criticisms pretty well. Not that I'm a Portnoy defender.
No,
I
he
like
certainly
Dave.
Does now. He didn't used to. He used to do the same stuff.
I couldn't speak to anything he did more than 5 years ago. Okay. From the last five years, I've paid pretty close attention to Barstool. But I'm just telling you, like, I've seen him send folks after, like, his guys after folks before. And 100% of those situations, I think Dave was in the right. And it's we live in a world where if you scream the loudest, you're heard the best and you're seen as right. Well, he couldn't allow himself to be, you know, to be seen as wrong or in the negative in something that he didn't do. And so he sends his army after him. This is not it for Conor. Connor crosses lines. Connor has no filter. Connor does anything he can to get edges because Connor can't beat him standing straight up.
Yeah.
He just can't.
No, I tend to agree with you.
But I think that's the move of a bitch. I use harsh language when talking about him because I went from loving this guy to having the veil ripped off of my eyes and realizing he's a fraud, man.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
just a showman. He's just a sideshow. That's all he is. He's no different than a bullshit car salesman. That's it.
What do you think about UFC's decision to actually do a post-fight interview with him in the octagon when he's sitting there with a broken shin?
Well, I mean, they do that to every main fight. I've never seen them not interview both fighters after the main event.
I've never seen them interview somebody that just had like a gruesome injury.
Well, yeah, but he was just laying there and they were waiting on the splint to get in. So why not get the interview in? I mean, every loser of the main event, as long as that guy's not unconscious and still in the ring, they've always interviewed. So that's yeah. nothing new. That's the first time the guy stayed on the ground because he couldn't stand up.
Yeah. Now it was interesting. I thought it was in poor taste.
I mean,
poor taste by Connor.
Now, listen, that ain't on Rogan and that ain't on UFC. Connor owns the things that Connor says. There's Agreed. Nothing in poor taste about it.
All the stuff that McGregor said was absurd and outlandish, and it's exactly what you would expect from him. But my God, it was so like just accept your loss and. You know, just say, hey, I made some mistakes, and I mean,
but he won't do that. He used to do those things. He used to walk across the ring when he got beat or got caught and shake the man's hand, even though he talked all this cold shit about folks. He used to do that, and now he's just gone off the deep end. Yeah. Now he's just a sideshow, and I think he knows it. And I think the second he ever shakes another person's hand and shows any real respect, everyone around, he loses his sideshowness. He loses his, you know, whatever.
It was the Cowboy Cerrone thing, right?
Like, he calls himself the Notorious, but you made yourself a bad guy. Yeah. Like, I mean, nobody did that.
It is certainly a heel turn at this point. Like, he's always been a villain, but he was always a lovable villain, and now, I mean, it's a whole different thing.
There's a big difference between who he's been for the last 6 months and who he was 6 months before that to the last 3 to 4 years before that.
Yeah.
A big difference.
So do you think he's done? Like, Dana White came out and said that they are going to do Poirier McGregor 4.
If I was Poirier, I'm not fighting him again until I have the belt.
That's the thing. Like, Poirier's next fight is for the belt. Like, he's fighting Charles Oliveira.
That's right. The next one. I would like to move on from Connor. I've beaten him 2 out of 3 times. And you know, the 2 times I beat him pretty handily. I would not give him a fourth fight unless we're doing equal billing. In this fight, Poirier got like $800,000 and Connor got like $3 million. Nope. Connor wants a fourth chance. And this time maybe a shot at the belt. If I have the belt, then I get the $3 million. And Connor, if you're a real fighter, you'll fight for the $850K.
Yeah. No, I will tell you this.
Connor won't do that. Connor won't do that because Connor only fights for the money now. He doesn't fight because he loves fighting anymore.
If I'm McGregor and if I'm UFC, if I'm wanting numbers, if I'm wanting, you know, whatever, I bring McGregor back. And, you know, there was talk of like the Diaz trilogy and all that. Yep. Like, I wouldn't do that because Diaz is at 170. Like, I don't take McGregor.
That's right. I was just about to say, you'd make Diaz come down a lot. That's tough.
Yeah. And Diaz is not going to come down to 155. Like, if you're going to do that, you're going to have McGregor go up to 170 again. And I think that thing is done. I think Diaz and McGregor is done.
I agree.
Think, like, there's a lot of interesting matchups that you could do here. But, man, I think you want to see what you still got with Tony Ferguson. And you want to see what you still got with Conor McGregor, right? Because at this point, we don't know what McGregor is. Like, I think Ferguson has lost 3 straight, but he's lost to Gaethje, Dariush, and Oliveira.
And McGregor.
Like, 3 of the top 4 guys. Yeah. The champion, the guy that's about to fight for the whoever. Like, I don't know what else to do with Ferguson, I guess. So, like, I think I would get McGregor back and have him fight Ferguson. But I don't know. I know that there was like some kind of beef going on between Rafael Dos Anjos and McGregor, and like that could be interesting, I guess. But like nobody cares about Rafael Dos Anjos. Like, he's had 43 UFC fights, and he doesn't draw. So like, why would you do that? But Tony Ferguson, like Okakui is somebody that people give a damn about. So that could be an interesting one. But I think the biggest thing to look forward to now is Charles Oliveira and Dustin Poirier. And we'll get that probably in December. So outside of that, I don't know, man. Like I almost wonder if McGregor should just retire from UFC and move into boxing. Like, I know that he's still under contract with UFC, so I don't know how that would all work. But if you want to stand up and strike, go to boxing. Like, you can sell. Like, you see what the Paul brothers are doing? I mean, they are pulling in stupid money. If people still want to watch McGregor, like, they'll watch him box. Like, I think I'm just kind
of. He can do exactly what they're doing. He can handpick a bunch of bullshit opponents and just beat everybody.
Yes. Like, I think that's what he needs to do.
He'll never fight a real fighter in doing that ever. Yeah. Because he'll get to handpick his opponents.
I tend to agree. Like, he was talking about the Manny Pacquiao boxing match and whatnot. I don't know. I mean, that's just it's so frustrating. Like, because, you know, you and I both have been McGregor guys for a while. Yeah. And watching it last night, it was just
disappointing. It's one of those vindications where I felt very right afterwards that I was public and open about, I'm done with this guy. I'm done with him. I'm out on him. I don't want anything to do with him anymore. And I'm gone. And then we saw what we saw last night. And then we saw him act the way he acted last night. And I felt this is why. I got to get off this train before this happened because he's just a piece of shit. And, you know, like I said, I don't think he'll ever fight anybody unless he's going to get a ton of money anymore, because he's only fighting for money. And if you say, oh, well, all these guys are only fighting for money. Yeah, but he didn't used to be that way. And he's made a just metric shit ton of money.
Well, for him, it was always about, like, for him, it was the belt when he was coming up. He wanted that belt.
It mattered then. But now he knows he's so far from belts, it doesn't even matter.
Yeah, like, the belts do not matter. There's
zero chance that he could fight for another belt unless he gets another fight with Poirier and Poirier has the belt when they fight.
I think he has to beat somebody first. I think that's why you do the Ferguson fight. Like, I think that's why you do Tony Ferguson and Conor McGregor. Because I think McGregor has to have a win before – and maybe not. Maybe this is just Dana's golden boy and he'll just let him do whatever he wants to do. Because I think Dana's
sick of him, but I also think Dana likes money. So.
Oh, 100%. Because, my God, that fight last night did like 1.8 million pay-per-views. It's the second highest pay-per-view buy rate of any UFC fight. Like, McGregor and Habib was number one at 2.4. This one was second at 1.8. I mean, it's absurd the amount of people that he can get interested in a fight like that, where he was not the favorite. Like, he wasn't the favorite going in. I think it's the first time that he hadn't been the favorite outside of the Habib fight. But, I mean, it blew my mind watching it last night. It just blew my mind. So, I know, I will say this.
Do you think they're going to ever illegalize those kicks?
So, I saw a few things about it last night, and they are discussing.
Because Dana was asked about it.
I think it's possible.
Because, like, this is not the first time by any stretch. I mean, talking, you and I have watched several of these events where somebody broke their foot on the kick.
Yeah, it's and this,
or they broke, like, their leg on the kick.
This one, I don't know if it was, they still don't know if it was a fracture from, like, one of those kicks.
Yeah, on the kick, and or then, if it was whatever. Yeah,
and then he put his, he put too much pressure on it when he stepped back from that punch. I mean, I think if I'm UFC, like, I might would. But, I mean, it takes a whole element out of fighting. Like,
there's a lot of guys that would need to not fight for a while and retrain. Reorganize.
Yeah, retrain and
there's a lot of the Muay Thai guys that would be destroyed by every jiu-jitsu or wrestler out there if you took the kicking away from them.
Yeah. I don't know. I,
you're
I
not
don't
taking
know
all kicks, obviously.
But tell me, how would you feel about it? Like, I think it
wouldn't bother me to take them out. It, you know, just because you just have to make sure the guys that utilize that as a weapon, as a tool for fighting, that they don't have a fight scheduled in the next 2 months. Like, they have to have significant amounts of time to retrain, because you just took a major tool away. But you're not taking all kicks, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, not all kicks. Just
leg kicks.
Yeah, it's strange. It's really, really strange. I'm not sure exactly what to do with it, but Either way,
if they're going to do that, I want them to take the damn foot stomp off as well.
Oh God, yes.
That's, like those are the two things that I want gone.
I'll tell you this: I want them to put like a time limit for how long you can lean on somebody on the cage. Like
yep, I would love for them to do more about separating guys, and keeping a fight going and interesting. I don't know necessarily how to do that, and I don't know the right answer to that because I'm not in that world as deep as some of these other guys. But if Dana wants to continue to grow this sport, he has to find ways. I mean, just like baseball, you got to keep the game moving. Yes. You know, you just can't have nine minute at bats. You can't let them lean up against the cage for, you know, 3.5 of the 5 minutes. It just can't happen.
I mean, it's just ridiculous. Now, if they're on the ground, if they're doing ground and pound, kind of like Poirier and McGregor were doing, like there's action.
But that's
there.
Not, that's different. Like, that's action.
Yeah, it's completely different. It's not leaning against the cage. Like it's not leaning on somebody.
That usually happens with heavyweights. The bigger guys do it because they get winded faster.
Oh yeah. But we also saw it with Gilbert Burns last night. That's so irritating.
Yeah, but Burns is a huge guy.
But I mean, he's a big guy, but he's not a heavyweight. Like he's
still a huge guy.
Yeah, he's the next
like
class
he's not lean. Wonder Boy is like a third of the size of him, skinny wise.
Yeah, no, I guess yeah, you're like, right. I mean, they weigh the same.
Burns is a thick piece of meat.
Yes, he is. Yes,
no,
he is.
No. So that there's no doubt that guy has no endurance at all. He's just cock strong.
100%. Hey, speaking of cock strong, I did not bring this up to you before we started recording, but the Fury and Wilder 3 fight is postponed. You know, it's supposed to be July 24th, and there wasn't a whole lot of hype with it anyway right now for whatever reason. It might have just been because Fury absolutely destroyed him that last time, and everybody had kind of turned their sights towards Fury and Joshua. Yep. But now, like, that thing's been postponed because Fury and basically his entire camp tested positive for COVID. So they are, like, quarantining for 2 weeks, which is going to go right up to the date. Like, they're pushing it back, and now they're looking at possibly October because they want to get past, like, the Pacquiao-Errol Spence fight in August. They want to let, like, the NFL and college football get going a little bit so that they don't lose out on viewership for that.
Correct.
I don't know when you do this fight. I have no idea.
I mean, October's fine. Like, you're not competing with the NFL and you're not competing with college football to do this on a Saturday, okay? Because these fights never kick off. I mean, the only thing going is Pac-12 after dark at this time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And every sports bar in America and every casino in America and sports book in America is all going to have both on.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So you're going to lose zero viewerships, and 80% of people that are going to watch this fight have no problems turning Pac-12 after dark off for, you know, an hour or two. It's a game that's going to go 4 hours long. The fight ain't going to last that long.
No, I think you're probably
right. I don't think – now, I agree with not wanting to do it immediately. And then also you want to give him time to see how COVID affects him, because we saw, you know, guys like Cam Newton, Myles Garrett last year, a couple of guys got COVID. And then coming back from it, it took them several months for them to ever feel like themselves again.
Yeah. So we got to see exactly what
happens. Because it does affect your respiratory system. It does affect your lungs. And we have to make sure he's not going in there with his lungs all jacked up.
Yeah. I mean, that would, my God, could you imagine, like, if Wilder ends up winning that one, so now it's 1-1-1. Like, it was a split draw the first time. So now it's 1-1-1. And Wilder's got the belts again. I mean,
no, but Fury, I'm gonna tell you, everybody in the world believes Fury won the first fight. Okay,
a lot of people do, but you know, Fury didn't get any knockdowns in that first fight. Like, Wilder
hit him with the best punch he's ever hit somebody with, and Fury went down, and then Fury got up.
Yep, it got up.
And nobody's ever gotten up from that. And I think him getting up and him finishing that fight and finishing as strong as he finished doesn't matter about the knockdown. He won that fight. Wilder hit him with his best shot and could not knock him out.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I'm gonna give that lean to Fury, and then Fury beat the hell out of him in the second fight.
Oh yeah,
no, not even close. I would like to see Fury and Joshua.
That was
I'm ready for that, because I feel like I know the best. Like, I don't need a 3-round fight when I feel like I know who the better fighter is already.
Yeah.
Like, once I have it in my mind, this guy's already the better fighter. I don't need to see it a third time.
Yeah, we talked about McGregor.
What the first two results are. It doesn't matter.
We talked about McGregor making excuses for losing. Like Wilder did the exact same thing after that second fight. You remember my suit that I wore out to the ring was too heavy.
I put this huge garb on to wear out to the ring because it looked cool, and it made me too tired. It's too heavy, that walk out there.
Yes, I'm with you. I'm with you. Let's kind of rapid fire through some of these other topics here.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Kansas, what in the world was Les Miles and Jeff Long doing and everybody else involved with that? Apparently Kansas paid a player to shut up and go away after he started complaining about teammates that lived below him selling drugs, threatening him. They unscrewed his lug nuts on his car. Like, he noticed his tire was wobbly when he was driving around town. Like, it became a huge dispute between teammates.
They eventually, like 12 of them with, he alleges, guns, came into his apartment with his dad and, like, basically threatened their lives. And the dad called 911 with the phone in the pocket and said nothing, so they didn't know what was going on. And the police just showed up.
Yeah.
And, like, this is some hardcore shit this kid went through.
And Kansas paid him. Basically kept him on scholarship.
Yeah.
And
let him take internet classes and told him, go back to West Virginia where you came from and don't speak a word of this, and we'll give you your free education.
And on top of that, they paid his mileage to go back home.
They paid him a stipend,
for
the 2 years.
So it ended up being like $50,000
of fuck that, Gary.
Yeah. I know,
but they're counting $22,000 a year for the 2 years of online school is $50,000.
I know.
That is a made up bullshit number that you don't get to count, that you gave him $50,000 to go away. Well, he didn't have to pay for college those 2 years that he took online college. No. That's a made-up number that costs the school $0.
I know where you're coming from. I know where you're coming from on that. I understand that. I refuse to count
that and say the word, they paid him $50,000. They gave this kid like $4,000 and shit.
Yeah, basically, yes.
Whatever, like, the 2 years worth of stipend was and the mileage to go home.
Basically, they did not cut him a check for $50,000. They cut him a check for $4,000 or whatever it was.
Or whatever the stipends and the mileage cost.
Yep.
That's what they gave
him. This whole thing, apparently, like, Les Miles and Jeff Long and some other representatives from Kansas basically sided with the players that threatened this kid, that were doing all this stuff. And,
well, yeah, he was a walk-on.
Yeah, well, but no. He was a scholarship player at this point because he started as a walk-on. Well,
yeah, he started as a walk-on. Yeah. Sorry.
And earned a scholarship. And, you know, his dad, like, they were calling him, they called him racist, even though he had a black roommate. But they said he was racist because he had money, like, because his dad has money. And his dad was telling those guys, like, he doesn't have money. Like, I've got money. Like, what are you talking about? It became this whole
thing. But having money doesn't make someone racist.
Exactly. Like, I don't understand. The whole thing was crazy, but they completely swept this under the rug. Yeah. And what I'm curious about, like, while this is shocking and whatnot, it shouldn't be shocking because, we've seen how bad the chemistry is with this program for a long, long time. So sure. we should have known stuff like this was happening. My question is, how many other programs go through this exact same kind of thing? Like, how many players just go away?
How many locker rooms are just complete cesspools?
Yeah, I would be willing to bet it's...
Well, I'm going to tell you this. It's more than Kansas. It's more than one.
I bet it's 50%.
I would venture to say it's close to 50%. Maybe not all of them drug dealers and coming to a teammate's house threatening to kill him, like for ratting on him kind of thing. But I'm going to bet you've got a lot of in-house altercations. Les Miles was, once again, gets a black eye on this thing.
Was asked about it
multiple times. He never met with the father, never met with the player.
The player
said that he would let them take care of it on the practice field, which you've got 12 guys against one guy, and you're going to let them handle it on the field?
What the hell are you doing, Les? Miles told, like, once the kids were reported for selling drugs or whatever, he called the kids into his office and told them that they have to keep this hush. Like, they have to stop being so blatant.
I think it is reported he told them to knock this off.
I don't think
it was keep it quiet. I think he says he reportedly told them to knock it off.
That's
not telling anybody to stop doing it, okay? That's not a punishment. That's not a reprimand. That's about as mild and as soft as you could get away with something like that.
Yeah. I mean, this whole thing is bananas.
Like, this is what I tell my kids when they're arguing over who's going to get the iPad charger, okay? Yeah, knock it off. Not when you're selling drugs out of your apartment and you're threatening the life of a fellow teammate. Okay.
Let's see. Miles, according to Caperton and Jamie, offered a different solution. The players would settle their differences on the practice field, pitting them against each other head on in full contact drills.
12 against one. I don't know how that works, Les. I'm not really sure how you pit them against one another. You just take, like, did they get to pick their champion and he gets to fight them? Does he get to call one of them out, or does he have to go against all 12?
Here we go. The information was eventually funneled to football coach Les Miles, like about the selling drugs or whatever.
Yeah.
And according to Caperton, Miles told the players to, quote, watch themselves.
Okay, yeah, watch themselves. Yeah,
watch themselves. Part of this story feels like just kicking a man when he's down, right? Like, Miles has already been through a whole bunch, but like,
he brought it all on himself. Hang on.
Yeah.
Hang on. He's not a victim here. He's not a victim.
No, let's make
that clear. This is my guy, but I'm willing to say he's not a victim.
No, this story.
This is all shit he did on his own.
Yes, this story it does lead to the questions of how many other programs go through a lot of this same stuff. I wonder, because they signed NSD or non-disclosure agreements, NDAs. So they signed these, and this kid signed it. I don't even know how, like, I'm sure that he finally just came, you know, open.
What are they going to do about the non-disclosure? Normally, when you give them real money, okay, you owe that money back, and they could legally come after you for it. Well, are they going to take his degree? Okay. You can have my diploma all these years later. Sure. All right.
Yeah, why not?
Because thanks to you paying him through the company store and not getting somebody to actually cut him a check, a real check. All right. Now, this non-disclosure agreement that he signed, you might as well just wipe your ass with it because it doesn't mean anything.
No, you're right about that. You are correct.
This is on them. This is on them. Get better attorneys and actually pay somebody something and maybe they don't talk.
Yeah. I mean, my God.
I really want to know who the four kids are that are drug dealers. I'm very curious as to why they don't name them in this story. These guys are adults. They're breaking the law, and they made threats to this person's life, to him and his family. I'm very, very, very curious why the Kansas Star protected their names.
I agree. I wonder if it has to do with them still being students or
what. Fuck that, man. When you're an adult. You're not a student. You're an adult in a legal situation. This is not they're kids because they're students. All right. If you go into somebody's property, you go into somebody's private property in their apartment, and you threaten them and their family to a point where they call 911 on you, No. You don't get protection under, well, they're just students. They're just kids. Nope. I lost that.
Yeah, I do wonder if Caperton Humphrey actually requested that they not be named.
There's a chance that he could be afraid of them still.
Yeah. I mean, even all the way in West Virginia, like I could believe it. But apparently this kid is like he and his girlfriend broke up after this. Like he's gone through some serious anger management issues, like all kinds of stuff. So he's been doing therapy like twice a week. Like it's pretty ridiculous stuff. And I think they're about to open a lawsuit against Kansas for this. I think that's why this is becoming a story.
I would absolutely go after some real money.
Yes.
100%. This fake bullshit money that Kansas gave them. Yep. Monopoly money that you created. Yep. Kansas money.
And I think the reason why they signed it in the first place was just to get out of there. Like just to leave. Like I'm done with this and then we'll bring it back up later. But
that's right.
It was pretty nuts. Real quick, the Atlanta Falcons have terminated linebacker Barkevious Mingo's contract. The charge for him, now normally you don't see a cut like this at this point.
At this point in the season, usually you wait and you get into practices. Yeah.
But apparently this was, he was arrested Saturday in Texas on a charge of indecency with a child, sexual contact. This was someone younger than 17 years of age. His lawyer or his attorney is stating that this was completely baseless and said that it was, they have limited information on their side because they don't actually know, everything that was alleged, but he said, what we do know is these allegations are from over 2 years ago and are completely untrue. Mr. Mingo is the victim of a false claim, and we believe this is motivated by money or some other ulterior motive. He was released on $25,000 bond on Friday. So I'm, you know, yes, this is, you know, ridiculous. If it is, by ridiculous, I mean on his side. Like, why would you ever have yourself in a position to be charged with something like this? But you know, if it was from 2 years ago, if he's telling the truth and nothing actually happened and this is just a money grab, like we've also seen those as well. So yeah. I don't know what to do with it. I don't know that I blame the Falcons for, you know, releasing him.
No, I don't either. Mainly this is a situation where is the headache worth the, you know, the pain in the ass that it is.
Yeah.
Mingo's bounced around from a couple of teams since he's been drafted, hasn't really produced or been the player that people had hoped he would be when he got drafted by the Browns. And you know, if he was a superstar, we'd have a Deshaun Watson situation on our hands. We're gonna sideline you until we figure out what's happening because we have a very much a he says, she said kind of thing. And we would like to find out the truth before we get rid of this generational talent.
Yes.
All right. But if you're kind of struggling to hold roster spots and you find yourself in this situation, that's just a shitty situation. And if I'm the Falcons, I probably want to move on too. Like, I don't want you wearing my uniform while you're going through this. And every time you go to court and every time your attorney, you know, shows up to defend you, you have the right to have all those defenses. I just don't want our company name to be involved in it.
Yeah. And I mean, the headline says Atlanta Falcons linebacker.
And in a couple of months, it won't. In a couple of months, it will say Barkevious Mingo.
Yeah, former NFL linebacker.
Whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe former NFL player, former LSU player. Like, there are certain titles that'll stay with him forever. But for the most part, like, that's just not going to stay on them. And it seems shitty if it finds out that he didn't do anything wrong. But it's more a football decision than anything else.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And I don't think that it's again, I don't think it's bad that the Falcons terminated him. I think it is smart on their part to get themselves out of this situation.
Yeah, they need I'm going to bet they want to clean that locker room up and they want to kind of have their own identity, and any culture issues that they see, they're probably just going to move on from. And if they end up, you know, having a couple of, you know, light years because of lack of talent for trying to revitalize the culture there, then I think you as the owner and the front office that's new there and then the coaching staff that's new there are all okay with that.
I think so as well. Let's talk some crazy stuff that happened over the weekend or I guess maybe a couple of days before. First thing I do want to bring up, the Scottish Open was this weekend, and when was it, on Friday, I guess it was, that a spectator
Friday
like stole Rory McIlroy's club out of his bag And this sounds like, if you just read a headline, it sounds, you know, worse than it actually is. Oh, a spectator came up and stole his club and ran off with it. No, that's not the case. The spectator came up, grabbed the head off the driver cover, took that off, looked at the driver, put that back on, picked up an iron, took it out of the bag, walked over a few steps, took a couple swings with the club, handed it back to the caddy. And then he was escorted off of the property by security guards. But, like, everybody watched him do this. Like, John Rahm was standing there watching.
There were, like, four guys standing there, all watched him doing it.
They're just, this guy walks up. I can't imagine how many cool snacks he had to have had to go up and just take a professional golfer's iron out of his bag, take a couple of swings, like, oh, yeah, it's a nice club. All right, cool. Hand it back to the caddy, and then just like, all right, I'm a bounce. Like, I cannot believe that we actually watched this. It was John Rahm and Justin Thomas, and McIlroy was watching, along with the caddies. Like, everybody's just standing there like, what is this guy doing? And I have no answer. Like, they haven't said anything about this guy. Like, he was just, you know, everybody laughed it off. The newspaper, David Wilson, a member of the nearby club there who posted the footage, said the players laughed it off, saying they knew he wasn't a golfer when they saw his grip. Like, they just completely laughed it off. But I can't imagine what it would be like at, like, the Masters. Could you imagine this? I mean, there's no way that this would actually happen at any of the, you know, pristine courses here in the United States. I don't think they'd be able to get away with it because there's so many security guards.
I don't know, man. I mean, I think there are plenty of security guards here too.
And this is what I'm saying.
You know, fans are pretty close to players, you know,
yeah,
at these places. I think you could walk across. What it was, and I think there were security presence there. No one saw this guy as a threat. So yeah, like, part of him, if he ran and grabbed it and ran off, I think 9 security people would have tackled him to the ground. Yeah. Okay. But the issue was he stayed calm. He stayed cool. He just walked up like he said, listen, this is a situation where confidence and acting like you belong there matters.
Yes.
Okay.
We've talked about that.
I've
on
gotten
the show.
Into many places in my time just pretending that I'm supposed to be here. Yes. That it's okay. When I was in the security business, I used to do this, by the way, all the time. We would be bidding on a contract to get this is some shit I used to do. Okay. I was a lot crazier when I was younger, by the way, a lot more.
Okay.
Today, there's no chance in hell I do this stuff, but I kind of was fearless and I was really good at my job and my bosses liked me and I kind of felt a little untouchable. And so we'd be bidding on a contract to get a place or whatever, or calling on a customer that wouldn't answer our call would be the biggest thing. We're happy with our security, whatever. And I didn't do any sales. My salesperson handled all that. And yeah, they'd tell me, oh, we can't get a meeting with them. It's like, oh, I'll have us a meeting next week. And they're like, well, how the hell are you going to? I just drive up there. And then I'd just walk right in these facilities. And then I would walk around and I would just like, we have here in Memphis area, we have nothing but warehouses. We don't make anything. There aren't any factories or anything. And I just walk through line and like just start taking stuff. And like, and then I would walk through the office. I'd walk straight up to the receptionist and I'd lay all the stuff that I just took from the aisles on her desk and be like, is that the president or the, you know, whoever runs this place? She's like, yeah, do you have an appointment? And I was like, no. No, I'm just here and I'd like to talk to this guy. And she's like, how in the hell did you get through? And I was just like, here's my card. Your security sucks. Give me a call. And then I would just leave.
That is so
fantastic. I'm certain 100% of the time she saw me as insanely creepy. Okay.
Oh,
there's
yeah,
no doubt that lady was 100% of the time afraid and I made her feel uncomfortable. And I look back at that now and think how insane that was. But I was able to do those things because I just acted like and I wasn't drunk, I wasn't high, I wasn't either. I just act like I belonged.
Well, that's I'm I used to do be this here with
and
concerts.
Zero people questioned me ever.
Yeah, no, it's I used to do the same thing when I was in a band, I would go to other shows, and just walk right like no laminates, no nothing, just walk backstage, and nobody would ever question anything. Because I looked like I belonged, I, you know, whatever. And we never had problems with anything. I mean, I was talking massive, massive shows, like arena shows. Just walk in the back gate. And they don't say anything. They just assume that you're part of it. Like, as long as you act like you belong there, then you're good to go. And this guy walked up and acted like he belonged. And that's
what I'm telling you. I fully believe that if he was to have ran up to that bag and snatched the club and taken off running, 12 Scottish police officers would have tackled him.
Yeah.
I'm talking guys we didn't know where security would have taken him down.
Yes.
All right. But the fact that he just walked up and he stood there for a second. He looked at all the guys and he looked at the bag and they're all staring at him. He just reached in to grab the club, tried to grab the driver, only got the head of the driver, the little cover.
Yeah.
And then reached back in, grabbed an iron. That's easier to take out. Walked over and acted like he was going to hit the club hood, the cover. And then finally they were like, "Hey, you can't do that.
Like, you're not give that back. What are you doing?" Like,
and he came quietly. He didn't cause a ruckus. He didn't take off running anything. Yeah, he just.
But it was fascinating. I will tell you that. I loved watching it.
I'm certain he's probably in jail. And I'm certain that, you know, hope the story was worth it.
I'll tell you this. I know he'll get to tell that story for a long, long time. Long time.
I always wonder, like, the guys that run on the field, like, streaking and stuff like that. I'm not talking about the weird, like, PETA protesters and people that do it to, like, for a cause. But just, like, dudes that want to, you know, pull the dick out and run naked onto a ball field. Do they regret it? Or do they, like 5 years later, are they glad they did it?
I would say it's probably 50-50. Right, because I think there's some that don't put any thought into it, but I do think about half of them put thought into it, and hey, I'll be able to tell the story forever, and people are going to remember me, and all this kind of stuff, and you never remember who it is, because they never actually name the guys, and they don't show them anymore, like not on TV. So,
but, you know, anyway, I'm always curious as to, I would like if I had real journalistic abilities and skill and resources, I would want to hunt these guys down, and I would get like stories from hundreds of them, like 5 years removed or longer, just to get an idea of,
hey, why'd you do that?
Not just why you did it, but what was jail like? Like, did you get your ass kicked by the security officers? Were they nice to you? Like, what? I want to know your experience? Story from the time before you jumped out to the time you've taken away. And then all these years later, do you tell this story in shame? Do you tell it with pride? You know, do you laugh at yourself about it? Do you hate yourself about it? Like, I just want to know how they feel now after the fact. And has it affected your life in any way at all?
Yeah, I would be very curious. I'd be very curious to know about this. Let's talk about a couple of crazy stories to close us out here. We'll start with this one. Michigan. This is Norton Shores, Michigan. This man made a striking discovery under his house when he went to demolish his back stairs. What's the first thing that you think about when you hear somebody found a discovery like under their house or whatever?
Oh, well, it's got to be a skeleton of some kind.
Actually, no. This is 160 antique bowling balls were found. Apparently, he found
Egyptian antique bowling balls,
no, like
from the 20s antique bowling balls.
From the 1960s. This isn't like super antique, right? But 160 bowling balls. That's a little strange to me. So he said, I was actually a little happy about it because it's a little easier to roll bowling balls out of the way than to move sand and figure out where to put all that, he told the Detroit Free Press. He thinks that there are even more buried under his home besides the 160 that he's already found. He contacted the maker of the balls. It was Brunswick Bowling Products, right? So you've been to Brunswick Bowling Lanes, right? They had a plant in the area. Said they were made in the 1950s. Former employees contacted him, told him the workers used to take scrapped bowling balls to use as an alternative to gravel or sand.
Well, yeah, it's filler. It's basically filler. I have to fill the area after you pour the footings and stuff, backfill it with dirt or sand or gravel or something, you know, before you put a slab or build a foundation on top of it. And well, if I have all these balls, then that's way less
sand or
gravel that I got to buy, or dirt.
So it said Brunswick shut down the plant in 2006. Olson said many of the balls aren't in good shape. They don't even have finger holes. They aren't polished, all that kind of stuff. But he donated some. They plan to give some to the Muskegon Heritage Museum. And then he said he's going to use the rest for landscaping and making sculptures, et cetera. So So I
so I'm so this is where the, so I'm sure people did this, and because they told him they did this, it's not worth it. The first thing I would be doing is sawing into these balls.
Okay, so explain why.
Because I would be assuming that the people that did this were like drug kingpins, and inside of these balls is either like 60-year-old cocaine
or money or
a shitload of money.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
That's what I would be doing. But that's where my criminal mind immediately goes is oh, these aren't bowling balls. There's a reason they don't have finger holes drilling them, because those things are full of Colombian Bam Bam.
Right? Colombian Bam Bam. Yeah. Okay. I can give it that.
There's no doubt I would be sawing into some balls, and maybe after cutting open about 25 to 30 and them all just being bowling balls, I'd probably stop.
Yeah. At that point, it's like, okay. Like, but, there's nothing but here.
I'm not calling a soul
until I've drilling.
Cut into a good portion of them.
That's it. What would you use to cut? Like, just a drill, you think? Or probably saw?
The first thing you would probably do is just start. The same thing they drill finger holes in.
Yeah.
You just get a drill and start drilling, but you go slow. Because you start hitting dollar bills, you don't want to keep drilling no more.
You're 100% right about that. 100% right. All right. And finally, last story that I wanted to bring up. Do you know where the largest mall in Louisiana is?
The largest mall in Louisiana?
Yes.
I'm going to guess it's not in Baton Rouge or New Orleans, because those would be too easy.
It is the Mall of Louisiana in
Baton Rouge. Okay, so it is the mall in Baton Rouge.
Yes.
Okay, I was assuming that you were going to tell me some podunk Paris I'd never heard of before.
So this has been multiple days now at this point. Authorities say that they have been searching for a 12-foot python.
Oh, hell no.
That escaped from its enclosure. Inside, look,
I don't do snakes, man. I don't even want to talk about this.
Inside of the Mall of Louisiana. So Kara, a yellow and white Burmese python, slithered out of its enclosure.
He gave his bitch a name?
Yes. It's at the Blue Zoo in the Mall of Louisiana in Baton Rouge. This was on Tuesday. They still hadn't found this thing yet. No. She was still on the loose.
Are we certain it's in the mall?
The zoo, like the Blue Zoo, is in the mall. But we don't, I mean, maybe that thing is slid. I'm sure that somebody would have noticed it if it like just slid out.
This is a get all the animals and other people out and you just set it on fire. You just burn this bitch to the ground.
Yes. So this is what they said.
The whole mall, the largest mall in the state of Louisiana, you just turn it to rubble.
Just burn it. It said, while we've created a very secure home for Kara, our Burmese python, she has slithered out of her exhibit, the Blue Zoo said, in a statement. Kara is a non-poisonous, friendly snake that enjoys her time interacting with guests during our snake education shows. It says pythons slowly squeeze their prey to death before swallowing them. Kara was described as very sweet by her handlers, who released a photo of the animal.
Who she would eat the shit out of as soon as she could hold them in her stomach.
It says that the search efforts continue, but the Mall of Louisiana remains open. There ain't no way. You'd be catching me.
So then people go into this mall with this damn thing on the loose?
Yes.
Gary, you could tell me there was a grizzly bear in there, and I'd probably be like, yeah, the chances of him wanting to eat me are probably slim, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, this thing's used to eating salmon, so he's probably going to pick off a child before he goes after a grown man, right?
100%. Yes.
There's zero chance. So we go to the Memphis Zoo. We're zoo members and we go to the zoo quite often. It has been years since we've gone through the reptile house.
Yeah.
And I won't do it. I just won't. If my kids want to go knock yourselves out, I don't do it. There are very few things in this world that I'm afraid of. And when I tell you I have an unhealthy, completely irrational fear of snakes, it is not rational at all. I can't watch them on TV. When I'm scrolling through Twitter or Facebook and I see a video of just somebody with the snake in it, like I immediately, like, I've thrown my phone, and like my wife will come and find the video and like hide that person's stuff for a while. Like,
I can believe
that irrationally afraid of snakes.
So I took Lincoln, you know, my 3-year-old, to the Petco in town the other day, because we had to get, you know, stuff for our dog and whatever else. And he wanted to look at some of the little animals there. He decided that he wanted a pet spider. So he's like all about these tarantulas that are in there. And I cannot stand spiders. Yeah. I cannot do it. But he's like, oh, it's furry. I'm like, no, it's not. It's a demon from hell. Like, it's yeah.
like, that's, no. But that's my, how you my, are with my snakes. My youngest asked me if she likes snakes, would that hurt my feelings? And I said, it wouldn't just hurt my feelings. Like, you're out of the family. Okay. Like, I could find out you were a serial killer and I'd be like, yeah, but you're my little girl.
Yeah.
You just enjoy snakes and want to like study them and work with them. No.
Nope,
no, out. You're done to me. You're done. Out of the will.
You are nothing. Banished.
No more Disney trips to you ever again. No.
I love no. it. I love it.
Oh no. That's the one thing I can't do. I'd God. Really rather not ever talk about them. They're evil. Listen, I'm not a religious man, and I have maybe the most messed up like religious views in my head of like what I think might be real and not. I know this. When I was a child, I learned that the devil was a snake. And that's all I need to know.
That's all you need
to know. That's all I need to know. And I don't know. I can't tell you what I believe or what I don't believe. I know this. The devil was a snake.
Yes, he was.
Yes, and I don't do snakes. And if you're a weird snake person, I don't want to be your friend. I don't want to hang out with you. Like, and if something terrible happened to you, I wouldn't be the person to do it because I'm too much of a pacifist for that. But damn, I'm not going to be upset about it.
Now, you're right about that. The other sports news, like it, Novak Djokovic wins Wimbledon for his 20th slam. Like, okay.
Says he might not go to the Olympics.
I could believe that.
He has it, but no. This dude has a chance to be one of the few people in the world to have a calendar Grand Slam plus gold. He's the best tennis player in the world, and it ain't close, by the way.
No, I agree.
And there aren't a lot of people to ever live that have done that, men or women.
Yeah.
No, and the fact right. that he's willing to throw that away, I think is kind of insane because I don't think he'll ever have that chance again. I don't know that in 4 years he'll still be this dominant. And you just can't ever chalk up to, of course, he still hasn't won the Grand Slam yet. But I think that's crazy. I get him not liking what's happening in Japan and the restrictions and stuff. And it's just not the same representing your country in this way and no fans. Like, I understand being upset about this. If this was a friend of mine, if this was somebody that I had a relationship with, I'd tell him, man, you got to suck it up for 2 weeks because you have a chance to do something that puts you in a pantheon of history that nobody can take away.
Yeah.
Nobody. And I would encourage you, go through 2 weeks of hell and do it because you're going to hate yourself if you don't.
Yeah,
if you win that Grand Slam and you know you're confident that you could have won gold, there are very few people to ever take breath that have done that.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I had not put that much thought into it, but that's
I've thought about it a lot because I do think he's the best. I don't think anybody's challenging him. I think he's got to show up and just have a really bad week for him to lose one of these things. He's that much better than all the rest of the men in the world.
Yeah. No, I tend to agree with that. Other news, the Pirates select Louisville catcher Henry Davis with the first pick in the MLB draft. I was kind of surprised at that.
No. He was the best prospect by far.
Okay.
And now, then, Jack I say Leiter that by is... far. There were, I don't know, nine – between him and then like three different other position players, they were shortstop, I think an outfielder, center fielders, were all nine. There were four or five guys that everybody said there's no difference in, but most people had him the number one kid overall.
Okay.
My Red Sox took a shortstop, by the way, and they got a stud. I mean, this kid's supposed to be a beast, but damn, like this is an organization that really needs pitching bad, and I thought they would take. Now I think they were all counting on Jack Leiter to be there from Vanderbilt, and he got taken second overall.
Yeah, the kid that that your Red Sox took, let's see, Mayer, left-handed Mayer. Hitter. It apparently draws comparisons to Corey Seager. So,
he's a freak. I think he was the other guy that people were considering being like him. I think Sam Houston was in that conversation. There were three or four guys that everyone said there ain't a whole lot of difference between Henry and these other guys. You know, but anyway, I want it lighter. Lighter's who I want it. I can't believe Lighter got taken second overall. And I'm looking at the tracker now while we're doing this. Let me hit refresh just to make sure. We're at pick 10 through, and Kumar Rocker just got taken by the Mets. I thought Rocker would go before Lighter went.
I thought Rocker would for sure be top five.
Well, no, I can't believe the Red Sox didn't take him. I thought he would go before Lighter.
I mean, it's crazy. Absolutely crazy.
That's crazy. So anyway, yep. Neither here nor there.
Big time stuff. You know, there's always a bunch of other news that we could get into, but our time has run short. So we're going to go ahead and get out of here. You guys have been absolutely fantastic. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Of course, if you want to find our college football show, you can do so. Search out on YouTube. Just look for SBR Picks. It is right there. It'll pop up on the front screen. You can see it. You can also find it at sbrpicks.com/NCAAF. And you can also find everything that you need to know about us at winningcureseverything.com. Everywhere you need to subscribe, everywhere you follow, all that good stuff. You know, hit us up on Twitter, all that fun stuff. If you want us to talk about something, you can do so on YouTube or just hitting us up on Twitter or emailing the show one way or the other. But you can find it all at winningcureseverything.com. Chris, anything else we need to hit?
No, that's it, brother.
Let's do it. Hopefully all of you guys have a fantastic week, a fantastic Monday to start your week, all that good stuff. Take care of yourself, take care of each other, and hopefully all of your tickets cash this week. Thanks for checking out Winning Cures Everything. If you want to keep up with us, hit subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast app. Visit the website at winningcureseverything.com, or you can like us on Facebook or follow us at Winning Cures, at Gary WCE, or at Chris B. Giannini on Twitter. Share out the show, leave a nice review, and make sure to comment and tweet at us.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.